Hey everyone, welcome to It's a Bronx Story,
podcast by two lifelong Yankee fans about all things Yankees and a fun twist at the end of each episode.
For this week's episode, we're going to be starting with the heartbreak that was the Field of Dreams game and the nine games following, in which the Yankees went 9-0 leading up to the rained out game against Minnesota today. And we'll do a recap of some of the baby bomber events that have happened and other things around the MLB. And this week's question of the day is going to be revolving around some of the places that we'd like to see MLB games be played for special events in the future. If you enjoy this episode, please feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, check us out on our Twitter and Instagram at The Bronx Story. Thanks, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the seventh inning stretch. So join us now for Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Ladies and gentlemen, he who breaks the rules goes back to the house of pain.
All right, everyone. So starting with the Field of Dreams game on August 12th, which I just want to start by saying this event was absolutely incredible. I think everyone was super excited for it, but kind of with the London series, you don't really know what you're going to get with an MLB event. Sometimes they're big letdowns, but speaking for myself, I think it was absolutely awesome. I don't know what you thought, Jatinder.
I mean, I thought everything about that was great. You know, just the beginning with getting Kevin Costner and then having the Yankees and White Sox just come out through the grass, the cornfields. Like, I thought that was really awesome. And I thought it was pretty special. Did you watch the movie growing up?
I have seen it, but I haven't seen it in a super long time. So it's only kind of the main scenes that really stick out to me as, oh, I remember that from the movie. I definitely need to watch it again sometime soon.
Gotcha. I thought that was like one of my favorite like baseball movies. So I thought it was really cool that baseball did this, you know? And I think they had the highest broadcast ever, 16 million people tuned in. So obviously other people enjoyed it too.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into this later on in the episode for our question of the day, but I really do think that the Sandlot is a really good opportunity in the future. And I would say that's probably my favorite baseball movie. I think it's between Field of Dreams and Sandlot for a lot of people. So
what about Eddie's Million Dollar Cookout from Disney Channel?
Definitely. I think that one takes the cake there.
Forget Major League, forget Field of Dreams. Eddie's Million Dollar Cookout is definitely the winner.
Yeah. Bad News Bears is another good one that a lot of people forget about. Yeah. I feel like. Yeah. Stuart Little, or not Stuart Little, Chicken Little. Chicken Little. That was a good baseball movie. You never seen really? That?
No.
All right. Well, anyways, getting back into the game. Obviously, Yankees fans, we all know that didn't really end the way we wanted it to. We had
the game was started by Lance Lynn, who's been amazing this year. So I wasn't expecting a shootout by any chance. In fact, it was who's starting? Andrew Heaney was starting for the Yankees. And I was like, he was already homer prone, and I did not have any expectations coming into this game. I thought we were gonna lose it. I don't know about you.
No, yeah, I definitely agree, but if your team plays in one of these special events, you obviously always want them to win. We had that series in London against the Red Sox. We all know that was something. Definitely a lot of runs scored there. I think with the Field of Dreams game, with it being only one game, you kind of just want to go out there and win. Obviously, we had the cards stacked against us with us starting Heaney and then starting Lance Lynn, which is going into that game was arguably the leader in the Cy Young race. So it's kind of, you got to weather your expectations for that one. But I remember going into the first inning, Andrew Heaney got the first two batters out without much issue. And I was like, oh, maybe he's going to have a good game finally. And then with two outs, Jose Abreu steps up, does what Jose Abreu does, hits a home run. And you kind of just put your face in your hands and be like, all right, here we go again. It's going to be a battle.
And the ball traveled too. Like it looked like the ball might travel in this game after that first inning, just the way it carried so much.
Yeah, I mean, off the bat, I thought there was a chance it was going to be caught because it this year, I think we're finally starting to adjust to some of the stuff that was home runs in the past few years just doesn't carry as much this year. Mm-hmm. So I think I was kind of adjusted to that. And I was like, oh, maybe this won't get out. But it definitely snuck out of there into the corner. Yeah.
I remember watching that game. I was like, why didn't we trade for Alex Cobb instead of Andrew Heaney? Just so we could have Cobb in the Field of Dreams games, you know, with all the corn, it would have been pretty cool, I thought.
Corn on the cob. Yeah, that's a good one. But yeah, the offense definitely came out slow that game. Nothing in the first two innings, but I mean, when you're facing Lance Lynn, you kind of just gotta hope that that's where the setting of or like kind of the foundation of this Yankees team really helps us, because when you're facing that elite of a pitcher, sometimes you just got to hope for a home run. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Lance Lynn, he's fastball heavy and he doesn't give up a lot of base hits. So if you're going to score against him, you're going to have to hit a home run.
Yeah. Yeah. And nothing was really going our way until Aaron Judge stepped up in the third inning. And for everyone out there that says Aaron Judge isn't clutch, this was yet another go-ahead home run by Aaron Judge. Three-run shot. It's kind of a broken record at this point. He's absolutely incredible. OPS above 900 on the year. This was the beginning of a hot stretch for him. And it's just good to see when he's been healthy for most of the year. I believe the only significant time he's missed was due to COVID. So he's putting it together. He's at or around a 900 OPS all year. And he showed in this game why he should have won MVP in 2017. Not gonna float in that water for too long, but he showed why he's one of the best in the world in this game.
I've been waiting for Judge to go on a streak like this. Like this year he's been awesome, but you know, he always has like a 2-week stretch where he's just locked in, just hitting home runs every at bat. And I was just waiting for this kind of performance, you know, where he goes on an extended streak where he's just hitting every pitch for a home run. And this kind of was the start of that kind of stretch, I think, for Judge.
Yeah, and I also think that it always seems like Aaron Judge shines on the biggest stage. I know he has had his struggles in the postseason to a degree of over an 800 OPS, so it's not like he's not performing at all, but it always feels like whenever on a nationally televised game, a big game, an important game, Aaron Judge just seems to really get himself involved somehow. And it's really just what you want to see out of your players, especially your superstar. I think people were curious about Aaron Judge going into the year because of the injury history and not really knowing what to expect. But if you look back at his injuries, there's not really many that are his fault. I feel like there were a couple, like he had the rib injury that was due to him diving, which I mean, that it's kind of just a freak injury. You want your player to take those chances in the playoffs.
And Judge said, I know he got that injury diving in a playoff game, but Judge said at the beginning of the year that he's going to stop diving. He's going to pick his spots when to dive. So
yeah. And That's definitely contributed to some of his decline in his defensive numbers this year, but I don't think Yankees fans need to be concerned about that, because when it comes playoff time, Aaron Judge is going to do what he has to do to win the game. If that means diving for a ball, he's going to do it. That's not really a concern I have. He still looks incredible defensively. So
what about out in center field? How do you like him defensively in center field?
I honestly think I would rather have Joey Gallo out there because he has a little bit more experience. I think he's a little faster. He's a little more nimble, but I think they can both handle it perfectly fine. I don't understand Aaron Boone's reasoning for not putting Joey Gallo in center field, saying that he doesn't want to add more to his plate as a new Yankee. Joey Gallo knows how to play center field. He's played a pretty considerable amount of games out there. So I don't know. What do you think? Who would you rather have out there?
I mean, I think I would rather have Judge just because he's done it for the Yankees this year and he's kind of more familiar with center field in Yankee Stadium. And I do think it is a lot of pressure on Joey Gallo as the new guy because his numbers haven't been great with the Yankees so far. And I think just putting him in a new position might add to that. And so far, Yankee fans haven't been booing him, but he's hitting 152 with the Yankees with like 41 strikeouts. He's not, but you kind of don't care about that because the Yankees have been so hot. You know, he's just another guy. But I don't,
Yeah, and I think a thing with Joey Gallo, a big reason why he's not being booed is because, especially on this stretch, he's come up a few times with big hits, big home runs. The White Sox series, he had two home runs in one game, arguably was a big reason why we won that game. So I think when you do things like that, it buys you some time with Yankees fans. When Stanton's getting booed, it's because the team's losing. He's not performing. He's not even having big moments. I think if Joey Gallo continues to stretch for another week or two, and also we start to lose a few games, you'll see those boos coming out. But I'm glad that he's not getting booed yet, that the Yankees fans are giving him a chance to settle in and get going.
Yeah. So going back to that White Sox game, Field of Dreams game, the Yankees go up 3-1, and then you're like, okay, we put up three runs against Lance Lynn. Let's do it. Like, you're not going to get more runs than that. And then Heaney immediately coughs up the lead.
Yep. He gives up that that home run to Jimenez, and I forget who else scored that inning.
It was Zavala also hit a home run. I think Tim Anderson got the scoring started with a double, but Eloy hit a two-run home run, and then Zavala hit another home run to put them further in the lead.
Yeah, and that was in the fourth. So they go up 7-1 or 7-3 in the fourth inning. And at that point, the way the Yankees offense has been looking this year, you kind of just sit there and be like, oh, well, this is it. I know during the game we put ourselves in a few good spots. I know we had the bases loaded, and I think
we had the bases loaded. Yep.
And we only got one run out of all of that. So
yeah, Kopech was in a bit of a jam. We let him get out of it without giving up any runs. I know once Lance Lynn came out, he pitched like five innings, I believe. But then the White Sox, what's different about them is that they have a nasty bullpen with Kopech, Kimbrel, Hendricks, Bummer.
Yeah.
They have a good Crochet. Bullpen.
Yeah. It seems like they never run out of guys that can pitch effectively. And it's one thing to have a good rotation. It's one thing to have a good bullpen. It's a whole different thing to have a great bullpen and great rotation. That's what makes the White Sox so dangerous. And to go along with that, they have a powerhouse of a lineup. So this is definitely a team you can't take lightly, and you got to come at them with your best. And it looked like for the first eight innings of this game that's not what the Yankees were bringing. And then we go into the top of the ninth inning. We get a runner on for Judge, and we didn't get a runner on for Judge. That's when Brett Gardner hit the solo home run. And I think that it was fun to see. And then I think when Judge came up, it was like, oh, even if Judge hits a home run right now, it's a one-run home run. We're still down one. It's kind of whatever. But then he does hit it. So now we've scored two runs off Liam Hendricks. And I think you could see Hendricks was visibly shaken up by that. I don't think he expected to have any sort of trouble going into this inning. Which is odd, because I remember in the wild card game a few years ago against Liam Hendricks, Aaron Judge took him deep to left field. but yeah, so then was it Joey Gallo that got on before Stanton?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so Joey Gallo gets on. Yeah, that makes sense. Walk. Yeah. Sounds about right for him. so Stanton comes up. I think everyone's thinking it's obviously possible Stan could hit a home run right here, because Stan could hit a home run on any pitch that's within 50 feet of him if it just touches his bat. But I don't think anyone really expected it. I'm sure most fans expected him to go down swinging on a slider down and away that he had no chance at hitting, like as he does half of his at bats. But but he did it. He hits the home run to left field, and I think
we go up 8-7 at that point, and the left fielder just bonks his head on the top of the wooden like fence. I thought he had a chance at that home run. I thought he could have stolen that.
Yeah, but he definitely did.
But he bonked his head. So Sten hits a home run, puts us up on the lead 9-8, right? Or 8-7.
8-7, yep.
8-7. And then we're like, okay, we got this. We have this game won.
Yeah, and I think Eloy bopping his head reminds me a lot of when Aaron Judge did that. Was it against...
Well, it was Goodwin. He was there for defense. Or I think it was Garcia. I think because they put in Goodwin to pitch run, and then I think they flipped them.
Okay, Leury Garcia.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, but remember when Aaron Judge hit his head in? Where was that?
Was it in Yankee Stadium?
No.
It was just like he was so tall, and he just like.
I want to say it was in Houston.
I remember. I vaguely remember it, but I can't say the stadium. I just remember Judge had a chance at a home run, and he just couldn't get it because he was just stuck.
Yep. But yeah, anyways, that reminded me of that. But then we go into the bottom of the ninth. I think everyone's feeling great because that was an awesome comeback. We did it against Liam Hendricks, their best pitcher. It seems like that's what the Yankees like to do a lot. They can't hit guys with 70 RAs, but when a lockdown closer comes in, they're like, okay, this is easy. Let's just score four here.
And at that point, Liam Hendricks was an all-star closer, all-world closer, probably one of the best closers in the game. He still is, but you know, at that point he had like what, a 2 ERA or something?
Yeah, he definitely was a really low ERA. Mm-hmm. And I think going into the bottom of the ninth, I don't think we wanted to see Zach Britton come in. I think we were texting about it, and I would have preferred either Chad Green or Loaisiga. Definitely Loaisiga if that's the option. But I do think they had pitched a lot going into that game. So I understand the day off and wanting to trust Zach Britton. But I mean, I think it was clear leading up to this game that Zach Britton wasn't sharp. And when you have a comeback like that, you want to keep that momentum. You want to win that game. And I mean, obviously you want to win every game, but especially you don't want to lose coming all back. That momentum. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially coming back, you know, you're like, you came back against Liam Hendricks. You're like, let's just put this in the win column. These are the type of games where you shouldn't win, but if you win, it's a big momentum boost.
Yep. And then we go into the bottom of the ninth. Zach Britton gets the first out relatively easily and then goes up 0-2, 1-2 or 0-2 on 0-2. Their nine hitter Zavala, which low 200 batting average.
He hit a foul ball that was initially we thought was going to be the second out, but it just rolled foul. And then I think that put it 0-2. And then Britton just walks him, lets him off the hook, walks the number nine hitter.
Yeah. And when you come into that situation as the closer, you have to know the situation. You have to know Tim Anderson's coming up. And walking a guy means that anyone coming up to the plate is the go-ahead run, the walk-off. And you can't walk their nine hitter there. It's not like their nine hitter is Yoan Moncada or Andrew Vaughn or Luis Robert or Robert, as someone that can actually do damage. Zavala is most likely not going to hurt you. You just need to throw him strikes, make him hit it. But
did that annoy you in the game when they just kept calling Luis Robert Robert?
No, his name is Robert. That is his last name.
Is it?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. I've always heard Robert.
Yeah, throughout the minors, he was called Robert, but I believe someone asked him how to pronounce his name, and he said it was Robert.
Wow, did not know that.
Yeah.
I was very confused why they kept calling him Robert, because I was like, I know that's how it's spelled, but it's pronounced Robert.
Yeah, I think everyone thought it was Robert, but I don't know. I think I've seen recently that it actually is Robert. But yeah, so we walk their nine hitter. Tim Anderson comes up and he hits the walk-off home run. It was a no doubter. I think
it was a classic. Like, this game was a classic. Like,
yeah,
I mean, think it was a big win for Major League Baseball. Like, if you were a casual fan and you tuned into this game, this was a hell of a game to watch.
Yeah, I think for a Major League Baseball fan, this game was absolutely incredible. If you have no ties to either team, it was just a fun game to watch. I think if you're a White Sox fan, awesome game to win, but you definitely got really nervous at the end.
Yeah.
But as a Yankees fan, it's just another loss.
We were used to it. Yeah. At this point, we were used to it. You know, you from the top half of the inning, you're ecstatic. And then the bottom half, it's just like, oh, what happened here? But we've had these happen to us multiple times now where we're not even fazed by it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most angry I've been this season is after Jose Altuve's walk-off. Anyone, literally anyone in the league, I would rather have walked us off than Jose Altuve. So this game, I was definitely upset. You don't want to lose a game like this, but I was like, of course, like it, that's what's going to happen. It's Tim Anderson. Like, I thought, do much there.
It was really cool that like the way Tim Anderson like celebrated, like, you know how they want emotions. I thought his walk-off celebration was pretty awesome to see. You know, tough loss for us, but like, I think if you're a baseball fan, just see that emotion. Like, that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tim Anderson's definitely one of the most fun players in baseball. He's if we're gonna have to get walked off by a player, that's one that would bother me a little bit less. I think he's one of the players that started the whole movement of making baseball fun again.
Yeah, I think, but you're gonna see, I think Tim Anderson was like a thorn this entire series. Like, you always had him in the back of your mind. It's like, oh my god, what is he gonna do next?
Yeah. And so we got walked off. We lose the game 9-8. Definitely a tough loss. Zach Britton at this point comes out after the game and says, I don't think I should be trusted in these situations. There are other players in this bullpen that deserve it more than I do, which that's a tough mental state to be in, especially as a high leverage reliever. You don't want him to be saying that, but at least he's being honest. He's saying he doesn't think he should be put in those situations. So immediately Boone should probably stop putting him in those situations.
Yeah. Had an off day Friday to travel back to Chicago. So at that point, Boone says they're going to start shying away from Zach Britton in those closer spots. They're going to put in Loaisiga and Green. And then also with Britton's comments leads you to believe he shouldn't be in the ninth under any circumstances.
Yeah. And I think just the fan watching, it's pretty obvious that he doesn't have it right now. He's a sinker ball.
You could
pitcher.
Tell by his body language that he didn't have it coming into the game. You could tell he didn't have it.
He's a sinker ball pitcher that's had an issue this year of getting the ball down and also an issue with control. So when you're throwing a sinker ball, if it's not 97 miles an hour or faster, which Britton's sitting 92, 93 this year, when it's that slow, you have to get it down. If it's not down, a player like Tim Anderson's going to hit it for a home run. That's what's going to happen. And Zach Britton has just been doing it all year. I think it's pretty obvious to notice, because going into this year, he's given up however many home runs on a sinker in the last 5 years, probably less than 10. Now it's been multiple this year. I think he's a guy that needs consistent reps. So we're going to need games where we're up a few runs, where we can put him in the sixth inning, seventh inning, and just get him some work to get more consistent before we can trust him in these situations.
Do you think the injury bug also kind of hurt? Because he missed the start of the year, and then he came back, also got hurt again. So I'm sure the injury kind of played into it, but right now he's not where he needs to be, where you can trust him to close the game or even come in a big leverage situation. Like, would you trust Zach Britton right now in a tough situation to get out of it?
No. I mean, they're definitely a good chunk of players in this bullpen that I'd trust over him right now. And I do agree. I think the injury bug definitely hurt him. It didn't do him any favors, just missing that much time. He's a guy that needs consistent games to really be locked in. But so moving on from that tough loss, the rest of the series, we won both games. We won the game 2-7-5 and game 3-5-3.
In the second game, though, there was a scary moment there. Tyone was starting that game. He didn't have, like, the best stuff, but he kind of gutted through to get through that performance. Yep. The Yankees were leading in the ninth, and Chad Green was closing at this point because Britton had his blow-up. He yep. gives up a run, ties it. It's 4-4, and then we go to the top of the 10th, and then we score three runs. Joey Gallo hit two home runs that game, hit another home run in the 10th inning, and then Britton comes in to close it in the bottom of the 10th. Couldn't get it done. He walked the bases loaded and needed to go to the bullpen. Albert Abreu comes in a tough situation, bases loaded, and Tim Anderson, once again, walked us off, came up to bat, and struck out.
Yeah. I think it's also nice to mention that Aaron Judge hit another home run that game off Craig Kimbrell, another excellent reliever. Yeah. But like you mentioned, the two home runs for Joey Gallo, like we said earlier, that's probably a big reason why he's still not getting booed at Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Chad Green, they're going for a four out save with him. It did not work, obviously, gave up the run. And then going into the bottom of the 10th, I believe Zach Britton walked two and gave up a hit, but either way, bases loaded, no outs. And, Britton did get one out. And then Abreu comes in with one out, bases loaded, only had a two-run lead. And he got that first nice hit to second base to get him out at home. And I was hoping for a double play there just to end it, but obviously, it's going to be a tough turn. And then Tim Anderson comes up, and I think everyone's just like, okay, well, all he needs is a single. There's no way he's not going to get a single after yesterday. But Abreu, like Abreu has done recently, gets out of it, strikes him out, and we win the game. I think
I was just looking. He didn't strike him out, but he got him out.
Oh, yeah, it was a pop-out.
Yeah, it was a pop-up. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a big reason why we've put together the stretch that we have as Albert Abreu. He has come in countless times and just shut it down. I remember when we were at the game for the Gardy walk-off against the Mariners, he came in the top of the 10th, and we were like, okay, well, Abreu's in. We're going to have to score at least two next inning. And then the Mariners weren't able to score a single run off of him. So he's been really one of our unsung heroes after that Rays game when he just imploded, couldn't get a single out, gave up four, five, six runs. Ever since then, he's just been locked down, and that's been huge for us in this situation of uncertainty with all of our late inning guys.
And it can't be understated how much, like, that situation to come into bases loaded, one out, like, you could have easily seen him unravel and have like a Kresky type game where he just couldn't find the plate and just throws wild pitches or walks guys. But like Tim Anderson coming up with bases loaded, I thought he was going to do it again for sure. I thought he was going to come up with a base hit or a double to walk us off.
Yeah, I think every Yankees fan thought that at that point, but we were able to get through it. We move on to game three. I think this was a more, obviously still a two-run game. The Yankees just really don't like blowouts. But it was a 5-1 game going into the ninth inning. So there wasn't that level of extreme fear that we were going to blow this one. So that was nice. We didn't have
Cortez started that game, who's also been unsung hero throughout this whole COVID stretch when all our pitchers were just on the IL. Like, he was a breath of fresh air. It's like, I can't believe what he's doing. Nasty Nestor Cortez.
Yeah, nasty Nestor with six innings pitched, one earned run and seven strikeouts. I mean, against a White Sox right-handed power lineup, that's incredible out of Nestor. A guy that
now has Eloy, which is a different look, and they got Robert. Yeah. They have Robert now coming back from a hip flexor injury, and then Jimenez, they thought he was going to be out for the whole year, came back.
Remember earlier in the year when they did that thing after Jimenez got hurt where it was like he just died and they gave him that memorial the next game?
Yeah.
Oh, that was funny. But yeah, so Nasty Nestor comes in, another great outing. Ridings and Loaisiga do their job. Don't give up any runs. Ridings has looked pretty good. He's definitely struggled sometimes. I think his command definitely needs a bit of work in the minors before he's really ready. But then Littke comes in, bottom of the ninth, to close out the game and just doesn't have it. Gives up two runs, two hits, a walk. And then we put in Wandy Peralta, which before his injury, I think when he comes into that game, everyone's like, oh, this game's tied. Wandy Peralta sucks. There's no way we're winning this. Mm-hmm. But he did his job. Only gave up one hit, got both the outs, and we walk away winners. I think just some big
flirted
highlights.
With disaster, but we pulled it through.
Yeah, and some highlights for the Yankees offense that game. Odor with another home run. Another guy that's been an unsung hero for us. Just not paying him anything. Got him for the Rangers. And he hasn't been incredible all the time, but what he lacks in his cold streaks, he really brings a lot of energy to the team. We'll talk about it later with some of his mound visit antics, but he always seems to be there. He's always the first guy and the last guy somehow in a home run celebration. He's always on the mound for mound visits.
Energy to him. He has a great clubhouse guy, and then his stats doesn't show it, but he has a bunch of big hits this year, just either to put us in the lead or to tie it. Like, he's had some clutch at bats to help the Yankees.
Yeah, and I think everyone loves when Odor hits a home run because his little trot and dropping the bat's awesome. And then we saw another storyline of late, not at this point, but Luke Voit with a ninth inning home run to give us the 5-1 lead, which came in really handy. If he didn't hit that home run, this game's tied going to the bottom or tied in the bottom of the ninth. So that was a big home run. We'll get a little bit more into Luke Voit later on in the episode, but that's the White Sox series. We win the series 2-1. That's huge for us. We're beating the good teams. We're winning the games that we need to win. And then we move on to our makeup game against the Angels. I think
Cole for this start, and me and you were texting. We weren't sure if that was the right move because we had a doubleheader against Boston. We knew Monty and Heel was going to go for those games, but I thought it would be better if we have Heel pitch against the Angels, an offense that hasn't been lights out. I thought having him face the Red Sox was probably a bad call. Let's put Cole and Monty face the Red Sox and have Heel pitch this game.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely thinking that, but looking back on it, I do see the reasoning because it's a 9-inning game. Our bullpen is taxed. I think they trust Gerrit Cole to go deep into the game a little bit more than they do Luis Heel, because he's pitched two games. Luis Heel, there's no guarantee that he does well. If he gets blown up by the Angels, has to come out in the second or third inning, that's 6 or 7 innings of bullpen work that we just can't afford to have. Versus Gerrit Cole, you can almost guarantee that he's going to make it through 5 or 6 innings.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what you need when your bullpen is taxed.
Especially going into a doubleheader the next day that you know you're probably going to have to rely on your bullpen a little.
Yeah. And then Gerrit Cole comes in, absolutely shoves, 5.2 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 2 hits, 9 strikeouts. He does what Gerrit Cole is paid to do. Anyone that says 5.2 innings pitched as a bad marker, he just came off COVID. He's obviously was on a pitch count. He could have gone deeper, I think, but obviously being cautious with their ace.
Well, he pitched 90 pitches that game. Yeah. So he had another inning in him if need be.
Yeah.
Like, if this was a playoff game, he wasn't going to be taking out 90 pitches. Like, that Astros game, he did not want to be taken out. He pitched 129 pitches. Like, And when Boone came out, like, he was yelling at him saying, like, no, this is my game, which is what you love to see from your ace. You know, you want to see a bulldog just like be like, this is my game. I'm going to complete this game.
Yep. And I mean, boy, this game, we can breeze through this one because there's really not a lot to talk about.
It was all pretty much the first inning.
Yeah. Justin Upton hit the home run off Cole. It was a nice shot. And then the Angels didn't score another run the rest of the game. Then bomb the first. Joey Gallo hits a two-run home run to give us the lead. And that was it. That was all scoring in the game. Gerrit Cole did what he needs to do. We got shut down by the Angels pitching after the first inning, which we don't really like to see that, but we got the win 1-2-1, feeling good going into the Red Sox series on a 3-game win streak. And boy, this was a fun series. Going into this game, the first game of the Red Sox, just an updated standings. We are 2 games behind them at this point. And let's remember from episode 1, just a month ago, on July 4th, we are 41-41, 10 games behind the Red Sox. So,
yeah. So, not a little more than a month later, we have a chance to tie them.
Yep.
Although, if we win both games, we would technically be ahead of them by percentage points, but we would be in a virtual tie in the standings.
Yeah. And obviously, if we sweep the doubleheader, we have a chance to sweep the series, and that would give us the lead in the standings.
Mm-hmm.
So jumping into the first game of the doubleheader, I mean, everyone knows 7-inning doubleheaders, they're dumb. Everyone wants them to be gone next year. Let's hope the Players Association agrees with us. But
I thought they already agreed that 7 innings are going away.
I think Manfred said that he wants them to be, but I don't think he's gotten the
okay from the Players Association.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a discussion in the off season.
Okay. It made sense for last year and only for last year. I didn't like that they brought it back for this year. I was okay with it for last year because, you know, it was a shortened schedule. They needed to fit as many games as they needed in a short window before they played the playoffs. So it made sense. I was like, okay, fine. I could get over it if it's this 1 year. Yeah. I don't like bringing that up this year. Also, the extra innings rules is also incredibly stupid. If we're talking about stupid rules, having a runner on second.
Way worse. Yeah. But so going into the Red Sox game, game one, Jordan Montgomery is on the hill for us. The first 2 innings, he looked like Jordan Montgomery. His changeup was absolutely disgusting. It just looked like the Red Sox didn't really know how to respond to his changeup. And he was looking, especially JD Martinez, he made him look like a little leaguer, which we love when JD Martinez looks like a little leaguer, like he did all series. And we were kind of cruising. We scored 2 runs in the second inning, thanks to Andrew Velasquez. The 2-run single with the bases were the bases loaded for him in that one?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yep. And I believe there are also 2 outs, and that's got to feel great. His first time coming up big in the Bronx, and it's against the Boston Red Sox. Like,
and he's from the Bronx.
Yeah. You really can't draw it up better than that for him. And he got the hug from Phil Nevin after the inning. So, I mean, that was great to see. Yankees go up 2-0. And then the next inning, bases loaded for Monty. I think it was bad pitch call. We talked about this. I think we both agree it was a bad pitch call, and it was a bad pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Fastball there makes no sense against Bogarts. He can't hit the breaking stuff. Just throw him that to get him out with 2 strikes and an 0-2 count. But he throws him a fastball, misses his spot. It's middle-middle. Bogarts isn't going to miss that. And he hits a liner out to right field or left field. Sorry. And scores two. So the game's tied up. We don't put anything on the board for the next 2 innings. And then the top of the fifth,
let's talk about the Red Sox pitcher though, Tanner.
Oh yeah.
Like he had some really good stuff. Like Monty was shutting down the Red Sox. He had probably two bad pitches throughout that whole game. Mm-hmm. But Tanner, you said he looks like a right-handed Cole, and I could see Chris Sale. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Sorry.
Right-handed Chris Sale. Right-handed Chris Sale. That slider is an absolute frisbee. It's crazy, but that Velasquez single is huge because the past times we faced Andrew Tanner, mm-hmm. he's looked great. We haven't been able to hit him. We scored two off of him. It was a tie game. Then we go to the top of the fifth. Monty had been pitching well. It was really just that one mistake. And then Andrew Velasquez to lead off the fifth inning. Or sorry, not Andrew Velasquez. Christian Vasquez to lead off the fifth inning. Another bad pitch, bad spot, mistake pitch. That's kind of what it was for Monty. And he just hits an absolute bomb to left field to give the Red Sox a 3-2 lead.
In the fifth inning. So this is a 7-inning game. Game is getting late. So we're down 3-2. And then Tanner Houck has been pitching lights out. Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't say lights out, but he's been pitching really well. So we thought he was going to come back out for the fifth inning. They do not. They turn to the bullpen, which I thought was a mistake. I texted Ryan. I was like, I like this. Like, I did not want to face Tanner again. So going to the bullpen, I know they brought in Garrett Whitlock, who's been awesome this year, but I thought they did the Yankees a favor bringing him in.
Yeah, I remember that. And just thinking, oh, Alex Cora's an idiot. Why would you bring him? Why would you take him out? We haven't been able to hit him aside from one situation. And it really worked out for us. They bring in Garrett Whitlock, which on paper seems like a decent move, a pretty safe move, because Garrett Whitlock has been great this year. But
he has like a 1.5 ERA, something like that. So he's been effective all year, but I did not think that was the right move.
Yeah, and it really didn't work out for them because what was it? DJ and Jonathan Davis, I believe. No, DJ and Stanton, sorry. Or was it Voit?
It was Voit got the bloop single.
Yeah.
The bases loaded, and then Stanton pinch hit and got that.
Yeah. And I think it's important to mention on that bloop single by Voit, Judge definitely took a chance. He was pretty far out onto third base already. If that ball was caught, Judge would have been out. It would have been a double play, and that would have killed the rally.
Rally, yeah.
But
Judge, it was, I guess, bases loaded, one out, and then it was a bloop hit. If they catch that ball, Judge is caught. That inning's over. It's an inning-ending double play.
Yeah, but I guess Judge got a really good read on it because it was just barely not caught. But then Judge scores easily. Who knows if he was waiting to see if it was caught, then he might not have scored. So that was a big play, gives us the lead. And then Stanton comes up, pinch hit. Boone, everything Boone did this game worked. Stanton comes up, gets the RBI, gives us a little cushion. And again, just the bullpen management by Cora this game really didn't make much sense. Everything he did just failed. Nothing really worked for him.
Yeah.
But so we go up 5-3 in that inning. And then the sixth inning. Bring in Loaizaga. He has, I believe it was an 8-pitch inning. He really, they had nothing on him in the sixth. So then we get to the top of the seventh inning after the Yankees didn't really make any noise in the bottom of the sixth. And Loaizaga gets himself in a bit of a pickle in this inning,
at the top of the seventh inning the bottom of the sixth inning, it was a long inning. They didn't score, but it was a very long inning.
Yeah.
So it was like, 15, 20 minutes just on in the dugout, before he went out to pitch. So that definitely hurts a pitcher. But, I thought bringing him out for a second inning was absolutely the right call to do.
Yeah, I agree. And then he definitely got himself into a little bit of a pickle in the bottom of the inning or top of the seventh. And what was it? Bases loaded, no outs.
Yep, gave up three straight hits. So the first hit was Schwarber, a little slow ball that it was against the shift. Yes, so it was they had no chance. But it was okay, we're winning 5-3. But with the Yankees season, we just had the White Sox game that we lost in a heartbreaking fashion. Like, that's been a recurring theme. And then you kind of get in your mind, you're already like, the gears are turning. You're like, oh my God, here we go again. Gives up two more hits, bases loaded, no outs.
Yeah, and upsets Travis Shaw. Travis Shaw, that was, he hit a line out to Brett Gardner, and I think that they definitely could have sent the guy in third home, which I believe at that point was Kyle Schwarber. Yeah, I mean, it definitely would have been close, but we all know Brett Gardner doesn't have an arm. So they could have sent him, but they didn't. So you have,
I was surprised they didn't, but I get the move because you don't want to get a double play. Like, I don't think they would have gotten a double play, but you don't want to chance it there. You have him on the ropes, bases loaded, one out. You expect the top of the lineup coming through. You expect them to come through.
Yeah. And then Kike Hernandez comes up, and I believe he went down. He went up 3-0 right away.
Yeah.
And I definitely thought that he was either going to get walked or get a single and tie the game. But Loaisiga just pumps him sinkers. He had one that was definitely, it was up and in off the plate. But he got him to swing at it, and that was huge. And then gets the strikeout, followed by Hunter Renfroe, who just really had nothing. He had a foul ball, but
it, overmatched.
Really. Yeah, he was overmatched. He had an almost 100-mile-per-hour sinker that was foul tipped into Gary's glove to end the game. And we saw a lot of emotion out of Loaisiga right there. That was definitely the most we've seen. Oh, sorry, I just got distracted. There's a deer in my backyard. but yeah, that was definitely the most emotion we've seen out of Loaisiga. That was awesome to see. A huge win for the team. One game back from the Red Sox at that point, going into game two. And like the Yankees like to do, another close game, another two-run game. But
yeah,
we were able to... Who do we have? Yeah, we had Luis Hill going on the mound that game. And I'll let you kind of go over how that went for him.
He was awesome, in a word. It's like I didn't think going into this game he hasn't given up a run yet. And then, but this was the game that I thought we were gonna have a letdown. You know, we'd never been able to put our foot down and get these sweeps. So this game, I was expecting a letdown. I thought we were going to just split the doubleheader. I thought the first game we won, which was amazing, but like we walked a tightrope to get that win. So I thought the Red Sox, the second game, would come out ready to play. They did not. Luis Gil just shut them down this game.
Yeah, and it's incredible that he still hasn't given up a run. He's come up big every time we've needed him to. Mm-hmm. And he really helped out our bullpen, got through 4 2/3. So we only had to get 2 1/3 out of our bullpen.
He could have went longer, but Tyler Wade kind of messed up a double play. They had an inning-ending double play, and he just – or I don't think it would have ended the inning, but it would have gotten them the first two outs in the inning. Just kind of booted it, just let it get past him. So when Heel left, he had bases loaded situation for Wandy Peralta, and Wandy Peralta got out of it. But if those runs would have scored, it would have been an unearned run.
Yeah. But it's just overall great to see no runs. And then our offense this game was kind of just the home runs, Luke Voit and Stanton with two solo shots.
We were facing Eovaldi, though, who... Yep. We just don't hit. For some reason, we just don't hit Eovaldi. The rest of the league can hit Eovaldi, but the Yankees can't hit Eovaldi.
Yeah, I think – I don't know why we can't hit him, but we did get two home runs, two solo shots to give us a 2-0 lead, and that's – those two runs are all we needed that game. We only really needed Luke's solo home run because Wandy Peralta came in, shut him down. Yeah. And then Chad Green comes in for the save. And luckily, we finally have a no-nonsense save. No hits, no walks, no runners. Just a good old 1-2-3 inning.
It was a clean inning. Just shut down. Yeah.
Yeah. So we sweep the doubleheader at this point.
That puts us tied.
Yep.
Yeah.
And going into game three, I think every Yankees fan on planet Earth wanted the sweep here. We all knew it was possible with the way the team's been playing. And It started
so
off.
I went to this game in person. So I can tell you just how the mood was at the stadium. Like, obviously, it's a Yankee Red Sox game. The crowd is, like, pumped up. But we had Andrew Heaney going in, and it was Andrew Heaney versus Nick Pivetta. And we were hoping, because Nick Pivetta was pitching, that kind of cancels out Andrew Heaney's, like, bad performance, because he's been homer prone. He's been giving up home runs like crazy. He was just coming off the White Sox game that we lost, and we weren't sure what to expect from Andrew Heaney.
Yeah, I think just browsing Reddit and Twitter, it was clear that nobody had faith in Andrew Heaney. Everyone thought we should start anybody but him. I mean, it's warranted after the games he's pitched for us this year, but he is an MLB pitcher. He's been in the MLB for a while. He's capable of putting together a nice game, and that's exactly what he did this game. 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run, which against the Boston Red Sox is huge.
But it doesn't – the way he started that game, he faced Kike as the first hitter, gives up – it's a bomb to right field, stays in the park, but you're already like, oh, my God. And then he faces Bogarts, the third hitter, gives up a home run. And you're like, here we go again. Like, I can't trust him. It's like the Yankees are going to have to put up like 15 runs to have a chance. But he settles in and just absolutely shoves. Goes 7 innings. Every inning he went extra past the 5th inning, I was shocked that he was in there. I was like, oh, he's coming out for the 6th. Oh, he's coming out for the 7th too. It was really surprising. And what I really liked about that game was the Red Sox stood pat at the trade deadline, didn't make any moves. You know, they got Kyle Schwarber, but they didn't really do any moves. The Yankees did make some moves, and the two guys that they got, Andrew Heaney and Anthony Rizzo, both came up clutch this game. Anthony Rizzo with a 2-run single.
So yeah.
I thought that was just like good karma for the Yankees.
Yeah, it was definitely. Oh, we forgot to mention.
Did you hear what the Red Sox GM said about the Yankees trade deadline activity?
I did not.
Okay. Yeah, I think this was, he was kind of trying to troll the Yankees, I guess. But he was like, they had to be active because they're 3-10 against us. So it felt good that our trade. Yeah, of course we. So this game, we passed them in the wild card spot, not just like a virtual tie. We are one game ahead of them, and our trade deadline moves helped us. So I thought that was just good karma for us.
Yeah, and I think another thing that's worth noting, I believe it was after the second game of the doubleheader, that was when Luke Voit said that he belongs in the lineup. Obviously, we traded for Anthony Rizzo while Luke Voit was hurt. It's not much of Luke Voit's fault. I mean, I guess you could argue that him getting hurt is his fault, but it's not because Luke Voit wasn't performing that we got Rizzo. It's because he kept getting hurt and just wasn't on the field. And obviously, like, Luke Voit was top 10 in the MVP last year, like he said, and led the league in home runs. So he is a very good pitcher. So you kind of have to play him in some way. And that's kind of what he was arguing. He was saying, I know I was hurt and that's why we got Rizzo, but I believe I deserve that I get to play, or I deserve to play. And that's definitely a fair point by him. And I think a lot of Yankees fans were kind of divided on this, saying that some people were saying Luke Voit is like out of hand when he says that, and that it's his own fault that he's not playing. But he definitely makes a valid point that we do have to find a way to get him in the lineup consistently.
Yeah, I mean, he led the league in home runs last year. He's done nothing but hit for the Yankees. Like, the only thing you could say is that he just hasn't been healthy. And at the beginning of the year, you could tell that was his issue, because it was a knee issue that he had. He just probably wasn't set just to timing-wise. But now that he's back, like, you see what he's doing. So that game, the last game of the Red Sox game, that was the first game Rizzo played, because he was on the COVID IL. So now we've kind of had like a logjam between like, what are we going to do? I think our best lineup is with Voit at DH. Do you agree, Ryan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I think that it's tough, though, because Voit can't be our first baseman because Rizzo is a better fit for the Yankees as a lefty and a platinum gold glover, you know, because he's going to save so many errors for Odor, Glaber when he comes back, you know, even DJ when he plays second, if they have a wide throws, like he's a backing at first baseman.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to be a fun battle to watch, or not even a battle. It's just going to be interesting to see how they get them both in the lineup consistently. And I think it's also fun to note that Andrew Velasquez had two more RBIs this game. It's just such a fun story watching him live out his dream playing for the Yankees and actually producing. I think everyone wants to continue because he's really fast. He's great at defense. If he can hit, then there's definitely a spot for him somewhere.
Oh, what about the to end the game, that dive and throwing to first base? Rizzo made a great scoop there. Just another instance of why you want Rizzo at first base. But Velasquez has really opened some eyes, you know, with his defense. And he's not a power guy, but he has a knack for coming up with some hits, you know, getting how he started. And he's fast, so.
Yeah, I definitely think that play, if Rufino Odor gets to that ball, they're not getting Plawecki out. Mm-mm. The only chance we have is Velasquez, and he makes the nice backhanded slide and he just rifles it to first. And Anthony Rizzo just puts himself in a great position. That's a play that's really tough for a first baseman to make, and he makes it look easy. So
So one thing I was going to say, we didn't talk about why it was such a sticky situation. Chapman kind of came in and kind of made things interesting in that last inning, which is why Velasquez needed to make a great play to end the game. But Chapman just came off. Was it his elbow while he was on the
elbow IL? Or shoulder? One of the two.
I think it was his elbow. But it's his first game back. And then the Yankees are up 5-1. So it wasn't a safe situation, but it was his first opportunity in a while, and he's just wild. He's giving up hits, he doesn't have control of the plate, gives up a walk, and turns it over to Lutke.
Yeah, and he gave up an absolute nuke to Hunter Renfro. That was a very long home run. But Lutke comes in. And thanks to Andrew Velasquez and Anthony Rizzo, he gets out of it. We win the game. We get the sweep. We pass the Red Sox. A little bit over a month later, after being down 10 games, the Red Sox collapse. The Yankees are on fire. Best record in baseball since July 6th. And
Do you see parallels to 2009, Ryan?
Yeah. I mean, we started against the Red Sox horribly in that year as well. I think the team is definitely a lot different, but it seems like recently they're just like that 2019. They're just finding a way to win. It's not always pretty. It's not always easy, but they're winning. And
yeah, I think also in the 2009 season, the biggest turnaround you could point to, remember when Castillo dropped the ball?
Well, in the Mets,
the Yankees in July 4th, they played the Mets. That was their turning point against the Mets. They lost that first game of the doubleheader. And then since that second game, they've been unbelievable. I don't know if that loss just really sank in and there was we need changes, but they've made changes and they've been playing really, really well.
Yeah. And that's definitely what we needed to do. We went up against Boston. We needed to at least take 2 out of 3, keep it close. If we got swept, that would have been a dagger. But we swept them, we passed them the standings, and now our eyes are set on the Rays for the division. And I think a month ago, if you tell a Yankees fan, we're going to be fighting for the division in a month, everyone's going to be like, no, you're insane. What is happening? But we're here. It's not going to be an easy road to pass the Rays, but it's possible. Mm-hmm. And if we go into this Twin Series and do what we need to do, we're that much closer.
Yeah, I think it's crazy is that at the beginning of the season, you tell me we're 4 games behind Tampa. I'm like, how? why we should have the lead in the division at the beginning of the season. But if you told me July 4th, we're four games behind Tampa and we also have the first wild card spot, I'm like, what the hell? Like, I'm ecstatic. Like, the, it's a big turnaround between that month. So,
yeah. And I think we can kind of breeze through the twin series pretty quick as it is the Twins. We kind of, we know what to expect as Yankees fans against the Twins. I saw a stat on Twitter that we're something ridiculous, like 106-29 against the Twins since 2002, including the playoffs. And for whatever reason, the Yankees just find a way to win against the Twins. And it's just awesome to watch.
So the Yankees are 107-38 since 2002.
Yeah, that's...
So that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the scoring was plentiful in this series. We won game one 7-5, a little closer than we wanted to be, but we win game two 10-2, and then 7-1 game three. We got two blowout wins, which this team needed. We need to rest some of our big bullpen arms. Game one got a little close, but Stan and eighth inning.
Voit had a huge series against the Twins.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, every game that Voit's played in, following him saying that he deserves to play, he's contributed in every game. I think at this point, it's tough to make any argument that he doesn't deserve to play. You just got to find a spot for him. Yeah. I think, yeah, and that 10-2
on
win,
Friday's game, four for five.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4-for-5 with a home run, four RBIs. And then Saturday's game, also continuing his hot streak. Like, I like Angry Boy. I was texting Ryan. It seems like he has something to prove. He wants to show that he should be playing every day. He wants to be the everyday first baseman. Goes 2-for-4 with two RBIs.
Yeah, and I think our pitchers did what our pitchers need to do in the series. Gerrit Cole pitched Saturday, no earned runs, six strikeouts. Wasn't it like a crazy game for him by any means, but he got the job done. Andrew Velasquez with the eighth inning home run that game. That was just awesome to see. His first career home run, and it was as a Yankee in the Bronx with his family there. You can't really hope for much more than that as a player.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
which game was it that Stanton hit a rocket and it bounced and hit a fan in the head?
That was the Friday game. That was the DJ LeMahieu bobble night, where that's also fun to mention that DJ LeMahieu hit a home run on his bobblehead night. Oh, wait, that home run. I think Stan's home run.
No, that was Thursday's game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Thursday game because I went to the bobblehead night game and I watched it like on TV. So yeah, it was just, it gave us a little more insurance because we actually did give up a run in the ninth, Chad Green, but it was still good. Well, I guess it wasn't good to see Fran get hit, but it was just a funny moment, I guess.
He took it like a champ. He was up there laughing right after.
He did.
Yeah, didn't seem like he got hurt too bad. Yeah. Which is a miracle. Like, his head must be made of steel, considering it was Stanton. But we sweep the Twins.
Yeah. Obviously, was that where you were sitting, Ryan, when you went to the game? I think was that around where you were sitting?
It was, like, in that area, but I think I was a little bit over. I was a little bit more near the foul pole.
Okay.
But for anyone that watched,
was that a concern about you, though?
No. I wanted someone to hit the ball at me.
Okay.
Bridget was definitely concerned, and Bridget's my girlfriend for all of the listeners out there. She was definitely more concerned than I was, but I was all for it. I wanted someone to hit a ball at me. I didn't have a glove, but I think the adrenaline would have taken over.
Okay.
Yeah. But so yeah, we win the first three games of the Twin Series, and then obviously with the hurricane in New York City, game four has been canceled, and that's the day that we're recording this. So that's kind of our recap of everything that's happened since the Field of Dreams.
So a 9-game winning streak.
Yep. Yeah. And if we win that Field of Dreams game, it's an 11-game win streak, but hindsight's 20/20, whatever. We've definitely put in work since then. We hope to keep it going. We have a series against the Braves, which are arguably the hottest team in baseball right now. They're right there with us. So that's going to be a great two-game set. And then we go out to Oakland, which that is not as important as the Red Sox series, but if the Red Sox uses a 10, this A's series is a 9.5. It definitely, well, we need to win this
at
series.
At the very beginning, at the beginning of the month, I had this series circled because I thought this would have been our chance to move up in the wild card spot. The Red Sox were struggling, but the Red Sox had the first wild card spot, and then Oakland had the second wild card spot. I had this series circled like, all right, guys, we need to win this series. We're 2.5 over the Red Sox in the wild card and 2 games up for the first wild card spot over Oakland. But I think it's still important for us to go out and have a good series, you know, win the series or even sweep.
Yeah, I mean, if we sweep, that's going to pretty much solidify our spot in the wild card with a month left in the season after that. I think that's obviously expecting a little bit of a West Coast trip for us to sweep the A's. And this team can do it. If they do that, that's amazing. I think at minimum, we need to split. We can't lose the series. I'd be happy with 3 out of 4. And then kind of going to the rest of the year, we've got the A's, the Orioles, the Blue Jays. It's kind of a mixed schedule. We have some easy series, some hard ones, and then we end the season out with Boston and then Toronto and then the Rays. So these easy series coming up against the Orioles and the Indians and the Twins and the Rangers, we need to win these, and we need to win them convincingly, because we have some tough games. I don't want it to come down to the last game. If we can make it within 2 games of the Rays going into the last series with a chance to go ahead in the division, that's kind of the best we can hope for at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I think that's a pretty good recap of everything that's happened since then. We have a lot of season left to look forward to. Hopefully we can keep the foot on the pedal and really, really get into that wild card spot pretty safe and battle for the division going on for the rest of the year. And yeah, so I guess we can move on to some of the baby bomber highlights for this week. Just keeping it nice, short and sweet. We did have another no hitter down in the minors. This was a 7-inning no hitter, so I know some people feel a certain way about that. But Sean Boyle had a 7-inning no hitter, and it's kind of an awesome story for him. He's had a lot of difficulties in his career. He got cut from his high school team. He started at junior college, just wasn't a top prospect. He's battled a lot through the minors, and I mean, good for him for throwing a no-hitter. It's awesome to see that. And then some other players, Anthony Volpe hit a walk-off. He's just continued his absolute tear through the minor leagues. Randy Vasquez is another person I want to point out. He wasn't really a top prospect for us. He's a pitcher. But this year at Harvard or Hudson Valley at low A or high A, sorry, he's put together a good season. 4 games, he has a 1.1 ERA in 24 innings and 37 strikeouts. So that K rate is nasty. Only 5 walks. So he's looked awesome. He's primed and ready to move up soon. Austin Wells has been putting together a nice offensive stretch. In the last 8 games, he's hitting .353, .559 slugging. And another guy worth mentioning, Everson Pereira, which was a player originally mentioned in the Joey Gallo trade. He, in his last 11 games, is hitting .295, .659 slugging, 5 home runs, and 3 stolen bases at Hudson Valley. He's really lighten it up lately, and that's all you can really hope for. Just want to see him keep doing that. Trey Sweeney, our draft pick for this year, last 3 games is hitting .417, a 1-dot slugging. So he's doing what you want him to do, but that's at low A. We want to see him move up soon. Jason Dominguez in the last 23 games, .242, .374 slugging. Again, 34 strikeouts. He's definitely having some issues, but we're going to hope he works his way back up. And one last guy I want to mention, Beck Way, He in three games, he also threw a no-hitter. And in the last three games, he has a 0.56 ERA in 16 innings pitched with 19 strikeouts and only three walks. So we have a whole lot of potential down in the minors. And I'm just going to keep you guys updated along for the ride. Definitely got a lot to look forward to and hope they keep to do what they're doing. So, yeah, that's kind of the update on the Baby Bombers. And we can just mention a few things that have been going on throughout the MLB in the last week. All right, so across the MLB in the past week, in episode one, we covered the standings and kind of where everything sits right now. So we just wanted to mention some of the fun things that have happened recently. Most noteworthy, Tyler Gilbert of the Arizona Diamondbacks, in his first career start, throws a no-hitter, which, I mean, as someone that pitched, I think that's kind of your dream. If you can throw a no-hitter in your first ever start, it's only downhill from there. I guess unless you throw a perfect game.
Yeah, you just retire right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to beat that. I know that Trevor Plouffe is a big fan of his. He says he's a great guy. So I wish the best of luck for him. Hopefully he can keep it up, earn a few paychecks, and that's awesome for him. And then something else I just wanted to note, as this is a Yankees podcast, we do pay attention to the Mets, and they have continued to struggle going up against the Giants and the Dodgers, just really not putting it together. And Steve Cohen, their manager, put out a tweet saying... Put out a tweet saying that the team is just not performing to what they should. And I think that's something we just want to talk about super quick, because at least from my perspective, I don't think you should do that as an owner. You should probably do that behind closed doors and be like, hey, guys, what's going on? We got to put this together. I'm not sure what your thoughts on this are.
Does the Mets kind of like, I know we went from the Wilpons to Cohen, but do you kind of get that same like lull Mets feeling from these Mets? Like,
yeah, I mean,
they're in first and then they collapse, an epic collapse. And then you have the owner just putting out, I mean, it is true what he said, but I don't think you should be just putting it out there in public like that in a tweet, no less.
Yeah, I think Lowell Mets is a nickname for them for a reason. They always find a way to just fail epically. Even when they made the World Series, they just couldn't finish it. But yeah, I think those are kind of the two main stories of what's happened recently. If you want to get a nice recap of everything that's happened so far this season, as far as standings and what the rest of the year looks like, definitely check out episode one. But I think now is a great time to kind of transition into our question of the day, which, as I mentioned before, with the Field of Dreams game recently, I'm sure a lot of baseball fans have been thinking, what are some other places or movie sets you would like to see some baseball games in the future? And I guess, Chitinder, I'll let you start it off with some of the stuff that you've been thinking about.
Okay. I think this might be pretty cool for just New York, but how about a series between the Yankees and Mets in Central Park? What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, if they can find a way to have a baseball stadium in Central Park, I know there are fields out there, but obviously with the MLB, they're going to want fans there. Yeah. So if there's a way that they can make and have an MLB sanctioned event in Central Park, I think that'd be incredible. It doesn't really get much more New York than Central Park. So
yeah,
I really love that idea. And
then also just for the movie, I mean, obviously we have the Sandlot. I think that's the next like major event they should do.
Yeah, I think when you think of Field of Dreams, you immediately other baseball movies, Sandlot, you think of that. That's probably the second most iconic baseball, I guess, fictional baseball field behind Field of Dreams. So it's obviously right up there with spots that you would love to see a game. I think that one's a lot easier than Central Park, just logistically. You kind of just got to get a baseball field with some houses behind it and a wooden fence. It'd be awesome.
Yeah,
I think if they could have a situation where they get like a, maybe like an AI robot dog to kind of act as the vicious dog, that'd be super fun. Or maybe even just barking noises, but there's definitely a lot they could work with there. And then some of the some of the stuff that I've been thinking about going back to, if any of you guys have played backyard baseball, some of those,
that was what I was thinking as well.
Yeah, some of those fields are just, would just be awesome to have in Major League Baseball. I think with the generation, if you want to bring young kids back into it or millennials, a lot of us have played backyard baseball. So that's just another way to bring young people into it. I think that'd be awesome. And obviously,
I think that was my first baseball game that I ever played.
Yeah, it's definitely up there for me. I think that, and then some like the Sega, Ken Griffey baseball, stuff like that. But another place that I've seen mentioned all over social media is the Grand Canyon, where it would be super cool, but I don't know if you can really get the authority to build a baseball stadium on or in the Grand Canyon. That seems a little...
Especially if it's only going to be a one-day event, a one-game event.
That seems a little bit against the rules of the national park, but... I just think I also think Williamsport is an awesome place to have a baseball game, just along with the Little League World Series.
We do that.
Yeah. I think that's like another awesome event. And then I know we have done games in South Korea and Japan and Mexico, but just keeping up with the heritage of baseball, playing games in some of these countries like DR and Puerto Rico. Just having games in these countries and having the games be highlighted by some of the biggest stars, like having Javi Baez and Francisco Lindor on the same team, that's just an awesome opportunity to get them in like a Latino country, have them kind of like interact with the fans. I think there's just so many opportunities for Major League Baseball to kind of to grow their game.
And for the Field of Dreams games, they already announced it's going to be the Cubs and Reds. So they're going to continue this going into next year. But I thought it was obviously it was fitting to have the Yankees and White Sox do that first game just because of the movie. You know, that was all fun to White Sox players. But I just got me thinking, the White Sox should probably be more involved in these like promotional events just because they have a history of being in like having a bunch of promotional nights. Like, do you know Bill Veeck, the White Sox owner, would do like special events? They had like disco demolition, 10 cent beers.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of opportunity. I think another fun one that I've seen that I don't know the logistics of, but having a baseball game on an aircraft carrier would be pretty cool. They're definitely big enough to
yeah, I don't know how you would
but it'd be a little tough.
I mean, I could see like on like one of those Navy boats have like a baseball game for, and it's only just military allowed on there, and they just do that on the ship.
There's definitely a million ways they could go, and I'm excited to see some of the stuff that they come up with to grow the game. But if you guys have any ideas of what games you guys would like to see, definitely reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram at The Bronx Story and let us know what your thoughts are. What are some of the movies that you love to watch that you would love to see a baseball game based off of, or maybe some of your favorite places that you like to go that you'd like to see a baseball game at. Thanks, everyone, for listening. This has been It's a Bronx Story. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks. You can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at The Bronx Story.
Let's go, Yanks. Let's play ball.
Driven deep to left field. There it goes! See ya! Into the left field bleachers. An 11-game hitting streak and a 2-0 Yankee lead.
Telling you what, folks, this is getting fun. Remember him in the playoffs last year? Well, that guy is showing up again.